Hey mamas, I'm Alyssa, registered dietitian, picky eating specialist, and mama of two. You're listening to the Nutrition for Littles podcast, aimed at helping you raise healthy, independent eaters. Each week, we will tackle topics like picky eating, mealtime struggles, baby-led weaning, and so much more. Let's jump right into today's topic. Hey, 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 and welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited that you're here today. Today, I am covering basically five things that I would do if I could start over with my picky eater. These are the things that I would do, especially like first. So some of this is going to go back to when he was a baby and then also kind of moving through when he actually hit that picky eating stage. So super excited to go over this with you today because I know some of you are in the trenches with a picky eater currently. Some of you, your kid just started to get picky. Some of you, you just have maybe a baby who's eating everything right now and you're trying to prevent picky eating. Or you've already been through the picky eating situation with your kid. Maybe you've reversed it. Maybe you haven't, but you have a second one coming along or they're eating everything right now and you're looking at them being like, oh my gosh, please do not turn out to be as picky as your brother or sister. And so I think that this episode is going to be really helpful for a multitude of reasons. It's also something that you can, all of these things are things that you can start doing today to help with your picky eater if you are in the trenches of it. So do not be confused that you have to go back in time or find some sort of time machine to go back and fix this. You do not. I just think that this is going to be really eye-opening for all of you depending at where you're at. You can take little bits and pieces and start implementing it into your life literally starting today. So the first one and where I'm probably going to spend the most amount of time because I believe it's the most powerful. And like I said, this can be with your baby who isn't yet picky, with your toddler who's just started to show pickiness, or with your toddler or older child who has been picky for a period of time. So I don't think it really matters at what age you start this with, but kind of going along with the theme of this episode, if I can go back in time, if I could start over with my child, the biggest thing that I would do, and I know this is super hard for first-time moms, I would embrace the mess. And I wouldn't just embrace the mess, I would encourage the mess. I would bring the messes to my child. I would let him get so messy as often as I could, because the thing of it is that children are washable. And yes, while my life might be simply maybe harder that day, I might have to work a little harder on his laundry or take a little more time at the park to clean up before we get in the car, or maybe the car needs a cleanup or the high chair needs to be washed 18 million times a day. I totally get it. I was so stressed about mess, but mess is so important for children to develop, to learn, to make that connection between texture and actually eating different foods later in life as well. And so mess is so, so important. So I remember being a new mom and I remember how messy having a baby was, right? They're spitting up all the time. Excuse me while I drink my tea. It's always so funny. I always pour myself a hot cup of tea or coffee right before I record a podcast episode, as if I have any breaks to do that. So you'll have to excuse me while I sip my tea because I was not thinking ahead of time and decided to make myself a hot cup of tea while I'm recording this episode for you. She's not a planner, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so going back to being a first-time mom, I remember feeling like this baby's so messy all of the time. And I'm not a clean freak anymore. I have had three children, so I've been broken, okay? Every time I have a kid, a little piece of me breaks a little bit more. But, you know, I always think with motherhood, okay, this is like a total side tangent, but I heard this story one time, and I know that someone listening is going to know what this process is called, but I have forgotten it, so please forgive me. And I didn't think this was going to go in this way, but it just reminded me of this story I was told that there's this, I believe it's a Japanese practice of when a vase breaks, they fix it with gold, essentially gold glue, gold paint, whatever it might be, and they rebuild the vase and it becomes exponentially more beautiful than what it was before it was broken, because even in the imperfections, it's basically placed back together through gold. And so when you have this new vase, that's a culmination of the old vase and gold. It is this most beautiful, immaculate piece of art that no one can ever replicate because nothing will ever break the same way twice. And that's what I think about motherhood. It's like I've been broken and put back together in a more beautiful way. And every child has done that for me. And part of that has been breaking some of my type A cleanly personality that I was just obsessed with cleanliness. Now,
there's nothing wrong with being clean. There's nothing wrong with being type A. I just thought that I was type A and I wasn't. And so what was really beautiful about motherhood is it brought out who I really am over the course of years of being broken and put back together. Again, in this most beautiful way that I can only see so clearly now, in the thick of it, I was like, what is happening to who I am? I'm being worn down. I'm being changed. I was holding on to my old self for dear life. And the problem is, again, there's nothing wrong with being a type A person or a cleanly person or anything like that. The problem is that I was acting as if I was type A, and that wasn't actually who I am. That's not where I actually naturally flow towards, is type A. Actually, anyone who's listening to this who knows me in my real life knows, especially now in my life, I am the furthest from type A that you can be. What is there? Type A, type B. Over the summer, I learned about type C. I don't even know if that covers me. Like, literally, I don't even know if I'm in that category anymore. But I'm much more free as who I actually am and living into that personality. So really, I want you to hear me when I say this. There's nothing wrong with being type A. And there are people who are actually type A, and that is a beautiful thing. And we're all meant for different things. But if you know me in my real life, and especially if you've known me for a long time, you might be able to see this from the outside of my changing, kind of my transformation between being type A, uptight, plans all the time, like all these things, to who I am today, which is much more flowy. And it's just more my natural state. But it took me years of being broken to be this way. So all this to bring us back to, I was very stressed about all the mess. I liked having a clean home. I still do. I still enjoy when things are put together and cleanly and minimalist. And I still enjoy that. That's where my brain functions. But it was a different type of mania that I had of trying to hold it together. And I just remember with my firstborn, when he was spitting up, when he would poop through his clothes, I would pack so many extra clothes. I would pack so many wipes. I would be so prepared for the mess. The second that he got something on his hand, I would be wiping it off. The second that he spit up, I would be, you know, wiping his mouth, changing my shirt, changing his shirt, you know, dabbing it clean, whatever it might be. Any sort of mess that happened as a baby, as an infant, got cleaned up immediately. And that behavior did not stop for years, generally speaking. And I really remember it coming to fruition when he was starting solids. And this was kind of my first introduction to what real mess can look like. So, excuse me while I sip my tea. So when he started solids, you started to realize that they don't know how to pick up food and bring it to their mouth and hit the target every single time. And then they don't know that they have food on their hand before they touch their hair or before they touch your hair or before they, you know, rub their eyes. I remember his little sweet pudgy hands having peanut butter on it or eggs on it or sweet potatoes on it. And he would be tired and he would start rubbing his eyes. And I would just feel so bad for him that he would rub, and I would try to catch it. Sometimes I would, but oftentimes I wouldn't. And he would rub food all over his eyes. Now, sometimes he would cry, but most of the times, honestly, he wouldn't. I would be so shocked. Banana. Oh my gosh, banana in the eyelashes, and it gets like crusty and like it dries so fast and disgusting. It smells good. But other than that, it's just like so sad to watch all this squishy food go all over in his like wrinkles of his chin, or, you know, because he has all these rolls, and he would get food stuck in his armpit and his elbows and his little lines of his hands. It was just the sweetest, cutest thing. But at the same time, I was like immediately cleaning things up. So I would try and let him have his mealtime. But then generally pretty quickly after mealtime, I would clean him up right there at the high chair. I would wipe down his high chair. I would wipe down the floor. I would wipe down his feet, anywhere it got. I would change his clothes. Actually, one of my biggest mom hacks, and I still believe in this, eventually I got to the place where I would feed him without a shirt on. And then it was really easy just to like rinse him off in the sink. I would bring him over to the sink, or I would bring like a little mason jar full of water and wash his hands there and clean him up. And listen, there's nothing wrong with cleaning him up. I still think that you should be cleaning them up. But there was a different energy that I brought to cleaning him up that was more immediate, more readily available, more intense than what I wish I would have done. I would have let him get messier, not only with food more often, for longer, but also outside of food, like playing outside in the dirt more, doing more sensory bin activities. And not, you know, I'm not a big like promoter of spend an hour in the kitchen to get 10 minutes of play with them. But, you know, even buying things like Play-Doh at an earlier age, having mud kitchens available, being able to we would go to like a local lake and sit there in the sand. But I would always kind of either bring a blanket for him to sit on or extra clothes immediately if he got a little wet or something like that. And I just remember being a little more on top of cleanliness than I probably should have been. And I want to explain why this is relevant, but I really want to get the point across because there are so many products on the market to help you with the mess of children. And I get it. Like, it's so tempting to be able to make things so, so easy. But at the same time, that mess is so, so important. So for example, one of the products that I always tell parents of babies to avoid at all costs if you don't want a picky eater are those long sleeve bibs. You know, the ones where it's literally like a smock that goes all the way down to their wrists. I even got sent one from a brand who was trying to promote their product that I ended up sending back to them. I'm trying to think of the brand's name. I can't even remember anymore. But it was literally like this smock that went over their arms, but it went all the way down their legs, over their lap, behind their back. It was basically like a gown, like an eating gown that covered their entire body. And it was made of like silicone or, you know, plastic or something that would be like, A, heavy for the baby to wear. Like, can you imagine trying to learn how to eat while you're weighted with like a weighted vest and the weighted blanket all over you? But then it was also cumbersome to put on and off and inside the high chair and outside the high chair and all that sort of stuff. And then you would be cleaning this other garment instead of your child all the time, but it would kind of protect them from the food mess, which I understand, right? Like, I get it. I understand the intent there. But mess is one of the most important things. And we have a lot to cover today. This one is, I feel like, where I'm going to spend the most amount of time because this is so important. But I want you to understand that basically touching is essential for them to be able to taste. So I want you to think touch before taste. They have to be able to touch a food, a texture, have an experience with it before they know what that's going to taste like or feel like in their mouth. I saw this reel one time that I thought was so freaking funny. That was like, why is it that I can see anything and I will know what it will feel like if I put my tongue on that thing? So like, I'm looking out at, you know, a bush right now. And I'm like, man, I know, I can already imagine, I can predict what it would feel like if I went and put my tongue on that bush. Why do I know that? Have I ever licked a bush? Not that I remember in my life, right? But I know exactly what that will taste like, feel like against my mouth. Same thing with like a balloon that I'm looking at right now. I know exactly what that will taste like and feel like now. I actually have put my tongue on a balloon because I've blown up a million of them, but my point still stands. Anything that you look around right now, you can probably think, what would it feel like? My son's cowboy hat sitting right there. I know exactly what that will feel like in my mouth if I lick it for some odd reason. Have I ever licked a cowboy hat? No, but I know what it will be like. Do you know how I know? It's through experience of licking, tasting, touching, millions of different textures over the course of my 30 plus years. And so because I have that experience, I am able to predict what will come next. Now, even though I've never actually licked a cowboy hat, I've licked enough things that have a similar type texture to know what that will feel like. Does that make sense? I want you to really think about that for your baby, toddler, even young child. They have not been here for 30 plus years. They have not had millions and millions upon millions of exposures to different textures and mouthfeels as we have. So the touch that they need to do with their hands, with their body, actually comes before the taste so that they can start to predict. So super important for them to taste that food. Now, the other thing when it comes to texture and actually letting them be messy is letting them be comfortable in an uncomfortable position, right? It's not comfortable for anyone to be super messy, like thinking about going to the beach. Like, I love going to the beach, but I wouldn't call it a comfortable experience. When you think of like the sand getting everywhere, it gets in between your teeth, it gets in your eye, it gets down to your bathing suit, the water rushing on you, the salt, and then all of a sudden your skin feels super dried out, or it gets windy and the sand blows against you, or whatever it might be, right? It's not a super comfortable position, but I still enjoy the beach. Well, if we think about that with picky eating, it's super important for them to build confidence in uncomfortable positions. They need to be okay knowing that it's okay to not feel okay when it comes with different textures. So super important for them to feel confidence and understanding that something that feels uncomfortable, uncertain, is okay. They're gonna figure it out and they have more and more confidence in when to do that. And next up really that I want you to kind of think through is there's a deep sensory input with them being messy. They're allowing kind of that movement, that exploration. They have a sense of control. They're feeling things not just on their fingers, but also in between their hands, in between their, like I said, their elbows, their armpits, on their chest, in between their toes. All of these textured experiences all over their body play a huge role for them to get more and more comfortable with different textures. So when they understand how textures works, not only are they able to predict, but they also feel more comfortable and confident, like I said, with uncomfortable situations, new things. And when they're able to tolerate being put in a position where new things are presented, when they're exposed to new things, that means that they're going to be more regulated. They're going to be used to change, used to new things, which means that they're regulated around change. They're regulated around new things, which if we do the math, that applies to picky eating as well. So again, mess, so important for kids to be able to actually bridge the gap and become less picky or reverse picky eating. So super important to have that mess in their life. So that's the first thing absolutely that I would have done differently if I had a picky eater again. Okay. I know I said five and we're like already through our time for most episodes. So the other one's not going to be this long, but just also equally important, I would say. But the next one I would do that I remember doing with my son is I really believed at the time that I needed to build hunger. And while, yes, this is true, they need to be hungry in order to eat, being overly hungry is kind of like putting to bed a kid who's overly tired. We all probably know how well that goes. So there's actually a hunger window that we want to hit. But I was way underutilizing snacks for my son. And I know, I feel like there's a lot of recommendations right now going around on the internet to say to quit with the snacks for your kid. This is actually going to create an overly hungry kid that's going to be less flexible, less adaptable. So we actually want them to have eating opportunities more often. I know it's like so counterintuitive, but more eating opportunities actually puts them in that adequate hunger window so that they're not overly hungry or they're not too full. This is also why I don't recommend grazing. We don't want them to be able to eat whenever they want at any point in the day. We want a good balance between the two. And I remember kind of thinking, oh, I don't want to give him a snack now because I want him to be hungry for dinner. And while sometimes that is definitely warranted, there was also times that I think I was trying to build hunger too much and it created a fussy baby or toddler who didn't want to do anything with coming to the table, sitting at the table, using his utensils. I remember him being so frustrated the second that he would pick up his utensil and try to use it and the soup would fall off of it or the spaghetti would fall off of it. And he would just throw a massive tantrum meltdown because he's overly hungry. He's overly tired. He's overly stimulated. He's trying to learn a new skill. And I'm like, wouldn't this be helpful if you were more hungry? No, that's actually a bad time for them to learn. So we want to hit that hunger window just right. And that's definitely something that I would do differently if I had the chance with my picky eater again from the beginning. The next thing would be to build a meal and snack schedule. This kind of goes along with the last one that I didn't have a great meal and snack schedule. I remember going from nursing on demand, which was a beautiful thing, and I absolutely loved doing that, to starting solids. And I remember starting solids and being like, man, when do I feed him more? I'm like barely doing it once a day. And then I kind of got to once a day. And then eventually I was like, sometimes once a day, sometimes two times a day. And it just kind of slowly evolved. And I think that definitely around that 12-month mark, definitely by 18 months, there should be a strong meal and snack routine, schedule, rhythm, whatever you want to call it, where he has multiple eating opportunities throughout the day. And I wasn't necessarily doing that. And so I think, again, if I could start over with my picky eater, I would put in a meal and snack schedule that fit our family and fit him and was definitely more consistent than it was. I was a little more free range. I was like, you know, kind of just go with the flow, what we had time for. If we had time to sit down and eat a meal together, great. If not, we would throw a snack in to go or just nurse him or whatever it might be. And I think that meal and snack schedule that consistency is so important for kids, especially from a young age, for them to build up a belief that food is available, that it is not going to be scarce, that they don't have to worry about it, that they're not oversaturated with foods, and really creating a good balance would have been great from the beginning. Okay, so the next thing, this is the fourth thing that I would do if I could start over with a picky eater, would be that I would stop flipping out. Again, going back to my type A, tightly controlled, white knuckling through parenthood, especially the first few years, figuring things out, you know how it goes. I was flipping out over every little thing. I really worried. I went into spirals over sleep, over eating, over if he, you know, bit somebody or hit somebody or cried too much at something or got hurt or slept through the night or didn't sleep through the night or slept in too much or ran a fever. Everything was this like alarm bell for me. Now, to be fair to myself and give myself grace, I definitely, looking back, know that I had postpartum anxiety, if not postpartum depression, somewhere between those two things. Luckily, I did not have either one of those things with my other two babies, but man, I did not know at the time how much that was ruling my life and that came out as flipping out, as spiraling, as worrying, as anxious behavior, OCD, really came out for me in that time of my life. And what I didn't know then that I know now is that your energy matters at the table. And not, listen, this is also where I ended up going, is I knew that energy mattered and like how I showed up at the table. I didn't want to be worrying or gasping every time he gasped or choked or something like that. But so I would like kind of play it cool, but it would be very surface level play it cool. And what I thought I was doing then, I now know is nothing like the real thing of actually being regulated. And so I would come to the table and pretend like I was cool, pretend like I was regulated, pretend like I wasn't flipping out when on the inside I actually was spiraling over different things, whether that was rejecting foods, only eating fruit, only eating the bread, only drinking the juice, not eating anything at all, having multiple meals in a row where it felt like he wasn't barely eating anything at all, or, you know, going into like the gagging realm of things or choking even sometimes. And I was very afraid of all those things, not eating, not growing, not being healthy, not being able to have a strong immunity, not being able to sleep, having a hangry meltdown, choking, of course. All those fears were so high right below the surface that even though I was trying to cover it, his nervous system mirrors my nervous system. And there's really, unfortunately, there's no fooling the nervous system, especially someone else's nervous system who is relying on facial features and mirror neurons and your internal states, they weren't matching up. And so that was probably very confusing for him. It created a lot of unnerving energy, I'm sure, at the table that then led to pickier and pickier eating. This is why I actually have a workshop with my girlfriend, Eliza Kingsford, who is a phenomenal researcher and educator around the nervous system. She has more letters behind her name than I can even tell you in this podcast. But so many things that I've learned from her about the nervous system. And I actually did an entire workshop with her between the picky eating and nervous system kind of gap and how so many parents miss this. Maybe I will actually link it in the show notes if you want to check it out. I think it is such an important tool for us as parents of picky eaters, especially picky eaters that we feel like we've tried everything and we've done everything right. We've said the right scripts, you know, we've done all the right tools and tasks, but if something's not changing, it is likely more of a nervous system safety issue than it is necessarily a strategy issue. And sometimes we have the wrong thing like kind of foot forward. So maybe I'll link it in the show notes for you. So check that out. Such a great workshop that I did with her. Okay. Next is, and actually last is risky play. Okay. This kind of goes along with messiness, but it's kind of in the same ballpark for me, but absolutely hands down, if I could go back, I thought I was allowing for risky play. Now, again, this is like risky play done in a safe way. So this is him being able to take risks that didn't have, of course, fatal consequences, right? This is like, man, this would really stink for you to have a bruised butt. And this is really stink for you to have a sprained ankle or even a broken bone. It would really stink for you to have get upset, to have a meltdown, to experience uncomfortability, right? Like that would really stink. I don't want that to happen. And I need him to feel and build his own level and range of confidence. And I wasn't really doing that. And I thought I was. I thought I was. At the time, I was like, yeah, I'm independent, letting him be independent. I'm stepping back. I'm letting him do the thing. But when I look back on it, especially now after having three kids, they are capable of so much more than I ever knew. In fact, there was a time where my son, when I picked him up, at the time he was in daycare for a short while in his life, and I went to go pick him up from daycare, and he was, I don't know, 18 months old, maybe, probably somewhere around there, maybe 21, somewhere in before two, but not like a new one-year-old, you know? And I went to go pick him up from daycare, and he was, when I walked in, he was standing on a stool, washing his hands by himself. Now, granted, their sinks are lower to the ground and more, you know, capable for kids. He was standing on a stool, washing his hands. I walk in, he looks at me, mama, finishes washing his hands, turns off the water, dries his hand on the towel, puts the towel back on the ring and runs to me and says hello. And I was like, I'm sorry, you can wash your own hands? Like, what are we doing at home where I'm like propping you up on my knee and turning on the water for you and rubbing your hands between my hands and getting you the soap and putting it in my hand first and then giving it to you and then washing your hands and then giving you the towel and then putting it back for you? Like, I am doing so much for you. And I didn't realize what he was capable of. And that is hard. When you're not around other kids, when you're not already an aunt or you haven't already had kids, it is hard for your first time baby to understand what they're capable of. But now I'm like, wow, watching my 3-year-old run around doing things that I didn't think my kids could do until they were 6 or 7 is wild. And so really going back, I wish that I could have allowed more risky play, independent, even not even play, but like contributions to himself, but to his family, and really allowing him to do more in a safe way. Obviously, we don't want any injuries. The goal is not to have injuries, but at the same time to produce not only confidence for them, but again, that belief that they are capable. I'm not spoon feeding them. And going back again to, it's just coming back up again. It's funny. It's not even in my notes, but going back to the nervous system, something that I spoke with my friend about, Eliza, about is when you do, it's so hard because there's like this window of like things that your kids can do. And this is like where they're comfortable. If you're not pushing them out of their comfortability sphere, then they're not going to grow as quickly as they can. Eventually they will. Kids are independent. They'll push themselves. But if you're not pushing them a little bit outside their comfortability to get them to grow more, they actually are lacking confidence because they're getting stuck in this world of like, this is all I can do. It's all I can do. Right. And so you also don't want to push them too far out of their comfortability level where you're like, no, of course you can tightrope across this huge gap between these two mountains. Like, no, well, that's going to make them also very like, not confident because they know they can't do that or they fall or they fail and all they ever do is fail. So there's this window of space that we want to push them into, but not too hard to show them that growth is possible. Yes, you want them to fail. You want them to get back up and do it again. You want them to build that resilience that's so, so important. And it's kind of a tedious thing and I get it wrong all the time, but it's just about pushing them. And back to the conversation that I've had with Eliza that I didn't know I was doing is by doing things for my son was actually kind of subconsciously communicating to him that I didn't trust him. And so by washing his hands for him, I was actually taking away his ability to have confidence in himself because, oh, no, I can't do that on my own. My mom has to do that for me. And it actually subconsciously conveys to him, I don't trust you. You shouldn't trust yourself. You need help. You can't do this on your own, which then builds this mindset that plays into picky eating. I can't try new foods. That food's not for me. I'm not familiar with that. I can't do new things on my own. And eating is essentially, yes, we do it together, but no one can eat for you, right? And so we have kids that are picky that aren't picky because they're being stubborn or difficult or, you know, whatever it might be. It's actually just a lack of confidence. They don't think that they can do it. They don't think they can try new things. It's too scary. It's too much. They don't feel comfortable and they're not used to being uncomfortable. So again, going back to that risky play that kind of mixes in with the messy play, so, so important for picky eaters. Okay, I think I've made my point. I know that was a little longer than I expected and anticipated, but I'm really passionate about this. And I really think that, of course, if you don't have a picky eater yet, please take all this advice. Put it into practice right now. If you already have a picky eater, that's okay. You can still take all of this advice and put it into practice right now. And if you don't already know, I teach a root cause approach to picky eating because, as I've kind of explained here, sometimes it's a confidence issue, sometimes it's a pressure issue, sometimes it's a familial issue, sometimes it's a habit, sometimes, you know, all these different things are at play with picky eating. And so what is really important is knowing that picky eating can be reversed, and taking a root cause approach is the most effective way to reverse it. So if you haven't already taken my training, I'm going to link it down below. It's completely for free for you. So I will drop that link below for you to learn that method. And I'm also going to drop my friend Eliza's workshop down below for you if you're interested in that, more focused on the nervous system work that it might take for you and your picky eater to do at the table. I think that can also really benefit you. And otherwise, I hope this episode was helpful for you. I can't wait for you to tune in next week. See you then. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you're walking away with some tangible ways to bring peace to your mealtimes. And if you like this episode, please subscribe and tell all your mom friends. And as always, the best compliment you can give me is leaving a rating and written review, which also helps other mamas like you find this podcast too. You can find more from me on Instagram at Nutrition for Littles. Do you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast? Email me at Alyssa@nutritionforlittles.com. All right, until next time, mamas.